station's sponsor.
Welcome back to Front Page on the Pulse. Leonie McKeon is on the line. Good morning to you, Leonie.
Good morning, Rob.
Excellent to have you back. Third time on. We talked just a general Australia-China relationship first up. Then we got in-depth into Belt and Road. And a fair bit's happened since then. Not all good, I must admit, on top of China relationships with Australia, US and trade and even into the EU, and then of course the issues that popped up in Hong Kong, which has added another layer of complexity to the whole thing. But there's not a lot going on. I think the focus here has been very much on COVID and probably isn't all parts of the world, but there is still some activity going on with China trade-wise across the world.
Yes, well, we've just actually had the Osman talks in Washington, D.C., Rob. And this is all about the South China Sea. And it seems that the US are trying to get Australia on the side of almost sort of decoupling with China. And I think Minister Payne did a very good job by just keeping that mid-road point, not going completely with the US. I mean, we're in a tricky situation because of our alliance with the US. And also, we have a very assertive business partner, that being China. And they are a very important business partner. So I think to any kind of decoupling consideration would be really detrimental to the economic growth of Australia and also to the relationship with China. The relationship with China, I think we have to somehow try and rekindle that, and that's about understanding Chinese thinking. My expertise are in Chinese negotiation, that being the art of war, the 36 Chinese strategies.
Which I read after you mentioned it last time, and it is very interesting reading.
And in different categories too. When I was having a look at them, they're all in different categories that go together to form the whole sort of ruling.
Exactly. I mean, the 36 Chinese strategies are divided into groups of six. You know, you've got the advantageous strategies, the opportunistic strategies, the strategies for attack, the confusion strategies, the desperate strategies. So they're arranged in groups of six. They're very clever, and they're fundamental in Chinese thinking. And I'm an expert in these strategies, and I've learned so much about just negotiating in general from these strategies. And it seems to me that at the moment, the strategy that's in play is strategy 9, watching the fire from the opposite shore.
Yeah.
It's not really watching and waiting. Well, we're sort of, you know, going around, do we align ourselves with the US so much that we're going to actually cut ourselves off from China? And I think, you know, giving our government credit, I think deep down they really know that that's not a good idea, because China, as I see it, probably the next 10 years, they are really part of a huge part of the economic growth that we are going to have to, you know, have to go for as far as the next 10 years in Australia. So, and they're a very, very important trading partner and have been for some years.
Leonie, what I find intriguing is the Chinese model is very much one-minded, single focus from leader all the way down. They speak the same all the time. There's no confusion as to what's going on to from where I sit. What the problem we have with Australia and America in particular, there is a bureaucracy that sits behind and knows things, but we have these two leaders who tend to go off on their own tangent, particularly on the other side of the Pacific Ocean. Quite a difficult person to read, and then Scott Morrison seems to be falling in behind America or the Trump relationship more so than the trade relationship. Is it really the personalities that dictate the Australian-American opinion, or do the bureaucracies still hold sway?
I mean, I think answering that from sort of a different angle, Rob, in China we've got the one government. It's an authoritarian system, whereas in Australia and America, we've got what we call a democratic system. So we have, you know, we have the two-party or the three-party, whereas in China you've got the one-party. So as you said, you know, one person speaks and it goes top-down and it's not really questioned. Whereas in a democratic situation, we have both sides of government and we have that, that debate going on all of the time. So that's really simply about the different systems that we live in and the different systems that we use. Having said that, this is often the huge difference, you know, in communication with China and Australia and America. It's these different political systems and also the strategic negotiation and communication strategies that are used that we simply sometimes don't understand. And I think if we were to look at the strategies and understand how the communication is really put forward. And I, this is not about bending to China. I'm not saying that at all. This is about learning how to communicate. And, you know, the relationship at the moment is quite fragile, as we know, that many things have happened over the past few weeks. It is about now trying to get this relationship back up and running so that we can enjoy economic growth with China. And believe me, there is still a lot of business going on with China. We hear this in the media. However, you know, the iron ore export to China is huge this year.
Yeah, we've noticed that. So that part of it, that's important to China, so it still rolls on. Unfortunately, we're going to have to go relatively soon, but I do want to ask you, you've studied those 36 strategies. Was the activities in China one of those 36 strategies from where you sat? Because the timing of it seemed really odd, but also tactically sound. It depends on which way you look at it.
Which activity was that?
Well, when they come in hard on what was happening in Hong Kong, the Chinese government, and then it got Australia again offside and probably fair chunks of Europe offside as well, but yes. Very hard line.
Yes, yes. Well, look, I think there's several strategies playing out here. One of them is beat the grass to startle the stake, sort of throw something out there, and then that strategy 20, and then, you know, watch what people do. However, China does have, you know, often that, as I said, that authoritarian government where they do make a rule and that's it, they make a rule. I mean, I've seen businesses in China go along and then all of a sudden the rules change the next day and they have to change their strategy in China. So, yes, there are several strategies going on and I think Strategy 20, beat the grass to startle the snake, is one of them. And also Strategy 9, watching the fire from the opposite shore, is another one in play there.
I'm very intrigued too about the model of a communist government as opposed to the capitalist society that we live in. I'm not seeing actually too much difference at the moment. There seems to be a lot of extremely wealthy individuals that sit atop the Chinese business model with the underlings all doing the work. And when you look at the increased wealth of the top 1% in the capitalist world, the models aren't an awful lot different, in my opinion.
Well, I suppose if you looked at in that way, Rob, that is true. However, the difference is that, you know, we like right now, we're talking about the government on air. However, in China, you wouldn't be talking about the government. You wouldn't go and have a conversation with someone over a cup of coffee and talk about what's going on with the government. So, whereas in Australia and America and in a democratic system, we tend to talk about it and you know, we have an opinion on that. So that's the difference.
Yep. Yeah, major difference in that regard, but the actual business structure is sort of similar.
Sort of similar, but then when you really, you know, I'd say that China has changed physically. When you go to places like Shanghai, when we were able to go there in Beijing, especially Shanghai, it's a city that's absolutely, you know, grown amazingly. However, when you get into those business meetings, the business structure is quite similar to, you know, a really traditional Chinese business structure. Having said that, there are a lot of joint venture businesses there too, which has a lot of international influence. However, the strategies and the ways the Chinese do business with the networking, you know, the issue of face and all these kinds of things still exist there. So a lot of the changes, you say, wow, China's really changed. It looks like the West. But when you get right in there, it is very Chinese. And that's where we need to learn about. I think now is the time we need to learn about how Chinese people do business, how they think, how they negotiate, because this is really crucial now.
Yeah, it's a fascinating subject. We'd love to get you back in a week or two and see how things are unfolding, but thanks for enlightening us again on how things are looking, which is probably our most vital international relationship at the moment, without doubt.
Yeah, thanks very much, Rob. Great to be there.
Excellent. Leonie, talk to you very soon. Leonie McKeon talking again about Chinese relationships and